We're continuing Chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And if you remember, Dumbledore was taking Harry on a memory tour to the orphanage. "Here we are," said Mrs. Cole as they turned off the second landing and stopped outside the first door in a long corridor. She knocked twice and entered. "Tom, you've got a visitor. This is Mr. Dumbledore. He's come to tell you. Well, I'll let him do it." Harry and the two Dumbledores entered the room, and Mrs. Cole closed the door on them. It was a small, bare room with nothing in it except an old wardrobe, a wooden chair, and an iron bedstead. A boy was sitting on top of the gray blankets, his legs stretched out in front of him, holding a book. There was no trace of the gaunts in Tom Riddle's face. Merope had got her dying wish. He was his handsome father in miniature, tall for 11 years old, dark-haired and pale. His eyes narrowed slightly as he took in Dumbledore's eccentric appearance. There was a moment's silence. "How do you do, Tom?" said Dumbledore, walking forward and holding out his hand. The boy hesitated and then took it, and they shook hands. Dumbledore drew up the hard wooden chair that sat beside Riddle so that the pair of them looked rather like a hospital patient and a visitor. "I'm Professor Dumbledore." "Professor," repeated Riddle. He looked wary. "Is that like doctor? What are you here for? Did she get you in to have a look at me?" He was pointing at the door through which Mrs. Cole had just left. "No, no," said Dumbledore, smiling. "I don't believe you," said Riddle. "She wants me looked at, doesn't she? Tell the truth." He spoke the last three words with a ringing force that was almost shocking. It was a command, and it sounded as though he'd given it many times. His eyes had widened, and he was glaring at Dumbledore, who made no response, except to continue smiling pleasantly. After a few seconds, Riddle stopped glaring, though he looked, if anything, warier still. "Who are you?" "I've told you. My name is Professor Dumbledore, and I work at a school called Hogwarts. I've come to offer you a place at my school, your new school, if you'd like to come." Riddle's reaction to this was most surprising. He leapt up from the bed and backed away from Dumbledore, looking furious. "You can't kid me. The asylum, that's where you're from, isn't it? Professor, yes, of course. Well, I'm not going, see. That old cat's the only one who should be in the asylum. I never did anything to Amy Benson or Dennis Bishop, and you can ask them, they'll tell you." "I'm not from the asylum," said Dumbledore patiently. "I am a teacher, and if you will sit down calmly, I shall tell you about Hogwarts. Of course, if you would rather not come to the school, nobody will force you."
"I'd like to see them try," sneered Riddle.
"Hogwarts," Dumbledore went on, as though he had not heard Riddle's last words, "is a school for people with special abilities."
"I'm not mad."
"I know that you're not mad. Hogwarts is not a school for mad people. It is a school of magic." There was a silence. Riddle had frozen, his face expressionless, but his eyes were flicking back and forth between each of Dumbledore's, as though trying to catch one of them lying.
"Magic?" he repeated in a whisper.
"That's right," said Dumbledore.
It's magic what I can do?"
"What is it that you can do?"
"All sorts," breathed Riddle. A flush of excitement was rising up into his hollow cheeks. He looked fevered. "I can make things move without touching them. I can make animals do what I want to without training them. I can make bad things happen to people who annoy me. I can make them hurt if I want to." His legs were trembling. He stumbled forward and sat down on his bed again, staring at his hands, his head bowed as though in prayer. "I knew I was different," he whispered to his own quivering hands. "I knew I was special. Always I knew there was something."
"Well, you are quite right," said Dumbledore, who was no longer smiling, but watching Riddle intently. "You are a wizard."
Riddle lifted his head. His face was transfigured. There was a wild happiness upon it. Yet for some reason it did not make him better looking. On the contrary, his finely carved features seemed somehow rougher, his expression almost bestial.
"Are you a wizard too?"
"Yes, I am."
"Prove it," said Riddle at once, in the same commanding tone he had used when he had said, "Tell the truth."
Dumbledore raised his eyebrows. "If, as I take it, you are accepting your place at Hogwarts?"
"Of course I am."
then you will address me as Professor or Sir. Riddle's expression hardened for the most fleeting moment before he said, in an unrecognizably polite voice, I'm sorry, sir. I meant, please, Professor, could you show me? Harry was sure that Dumbledore was going to refuse, that he would tell Riddle that there would be plenty of time for practical demonstrations at Hogwarts, that they were currently in a building full of muggles and therefore must be cautious. To his great surprise, however, Dumbledore drew his wand from an inside pocket of his suit jacket, pointed it at the shabby wardrobe in the corner, and gave the wand a casual flick. The wardrobe burst into flames. Riddle jumped to his feet. Harry could hardly blame him for howling in shock and rage. All his worldly possessions must be in there. But even as Riddle rounded on Dumbledore, the flames vanished, leaving the wardrobe completely undamaged. Riddle stared from the wardrobe to Dumbledore, and then, his expression greedy, he pointed at the wand. Where can I get one of them? All in good time, said Dumbledore. I think there is something trying to get out of your wardrobe. And sure enough, a faint rattling could be heard from inside it. For the first time, Riddle looked frightened. Open the door, said Dumbledore. Riddle hesitated, then crossed the room and threw open the wardrobe door. On the topmost shelf, above a rail of threadbare clothes, a small cardboard box was shaking and rattling as though there were several mice trapped inside. Take it out, said Dumbledore. Riddle looked down at the quaking box. He looked unnerved. Is there anything in that box you ought not to have? Asked Dumbledore. Riddle threw Dumbledore a long, clear, calculating look. Yes, I suppose so, sir, he said finally in an expressionless voice. Open it, said Dumbledore. Riddle took off the lid and tipped the contents onto his bed without looking at them. Harry, who had expected something more exciting, saw a mass of several everyday objects, a yo-yo, a silver thimble, and a tarnished mouth organ among them. Once free of the box, they stopped quivering and lay quite still upon the thin blankets. You will return them to their owners with your apologies, said Dumbledore calmly, putting his wand back into his jacket. I shall know when whether has been done. And be warned, thieving is not tolerated at Hogwarts. Riddle did not look remotely abashed. He was still staring coldly and appraisingly at Dumbledore. At last, he said in a colorless voice, Yes, sir. At Hogwarts, Dumbledore went on, we teach you not only to use magic, but to control it. You have, inadvertently, I am sure, been using your powers in a way that is neither taught nor tolerated at our school. You are not the first, nor will you be the last, to allow your magic to run away with you. But you should know that Hogwarts can expel students, and the Ministry of Magic, yes, there is a ministry, will punish lawbreakers still more severely. All new wizards must accept that, in entering our world, they abide by our laws. Yes, sir, said Riddle again. It was impossible to tell what he was thinking. His face remained quite blank as he put the little cache of stolen objects back into the cardboard box. When he finished, he turned to Dumbledore and said baldly, I haven't got any money. That is easily remedied, said Dumbledore, drawing a leather money pouch from his pocket. There is a fund at Hogwarts for those who require assistance to buy books and robes. You might have to buy some of your spell books and so on second hand, but... Where do you buy spell books? Interrupted Riddle, who had taken the heavy money bag without thanking Dumbledore, and was now examining a fat gold galleon. In Diagon Alley, said Dumbledore. I have your list of books and school equipment with me. I can help you find everything. You're coming with me, said Riddle, looking up. Certainly, if you... I don't need you, said Riddle. I'm used to doing things myself. I go around London on my own all the time. How do you get to this Diagon Alley, sir? He added, catching Dumbledore's eye. Harry thought that Dumbledore would insist upon accompanying Riddle, but once again he was surprised. Dumbledore handed Riddle the envelope containing his list of equipment, and after telling Riddle exactly how to get to the Leaky Cauldron from the orphanage, he said, You'll be able to see it, although muggles around you, non-magical people, that is, will not. Ask for Tom the barman. Easy enough to remember, he shares your name. Riddle gave an irritable twitch, as though trying to displace an irksome fly. You dislike the name Tom? There are a lot of Toms, muttered Riddle. Then, as though he could not suppress the question, as though it burst from him in spite of himself, he asked, Was my father a wizard? He was called Tom Riddle, too, they've told me.
I'm afraid I don't know, said Dumbledore, his voice gentle.
My mother can't have been magic, or she wouldn't have died, said Riddle, more to himself than Dumbledore. It must have been him. So, when I've got all my stuff, when do I come to this Hogwarts?
All of the details are on the second piece of parchment in your envelope, said Dumbledore. You will leave from King's Cross Station on the 1st of September. There's a train ticket in there, too.
Riddle nodded. Dumbledore got to his feet and held out his hand again.
Taking it, Riddle said, I can speak to snakes. I found out when we've been to the country on trips. They find me, they whisper to me. Is that normal for a wizard?
Harry could tell he had withheld mention of this strangest power until that moment, determined to impress.
It is unusual, said Dumbledore, after a moment's hesitation, but not unheard of.
His tone was casual, but his eyes moved curiously over Riddle's face. They stood for a moment, man and boy, staring at each other. Then the handshake was broken. Dumbledore was at the door.
Goodbye, Tom. I shall see you at Hogwarts.
I think that will do, said the white-haired Dumbledore at Harry's side, and seconds later, they were soaring weightlessly through the darkness once more before landing squarely in the present-day office.
Sit down, said Dumbledore, landing beside Harry.
Harry obeyed, his mind still full of what he had just seen.
He believed it much quicker than I did. I mean, when you told him he was a wizard, said Harry. I didn't believe Hagrid at first when he told me.
Yes, Riddle was perfectly ready to believe that he was, to use his word, special, said Dumbledore.
Did you know, then? Asked Harry.
Did I know that I just met the most dangerous dark wizard of all time? Said Dumbledore.
No, I had no idea that he was to grow up to be what he is. However, I was certainly intrigued by him. I returned to Hogwarts intending to keep an eye on him, something I should have done in any case, given that he was alone and friendless, but which already I felt I ought to do for others' sake as much as his own. His powers, as you heard, were surprisingly well developed for a young wizard, and, most interestingly and ominously of all, he had already discovered he had some measure of control over them and begun to use them consciously. And as you saw, they were not the typical random experiments of young wizards. He was already using magic against other people to frighten, to punish, to control. The little stories of the strangled rabbit and the young boy and the girl he lured into a cave were most suggestive. I can make them hurt if I want to.
And he was a parcel-mouth, interjected Harry.
Yes, indeed, a rare ability, and one supposedly connected with the dark arts, although, as we know, there are parcel-mouths among the great and good, too. In fact, his ability to speak to serpents did not make me nearly as uneasy as his obvious instincts for cruelty, secrecy, and domination.
Time is making fools of us again, said Dumbledore, indicating the dark sky beyond the windows.
But before we part, I want to draw your attention to certain features of the scene we have just witnessed, for they have a great bearing on the matters we shall be discussing in future meetings.
Firstly, I hope you noticed Riddle's reaction when I mentioned that another shared his name, Tom.
Harry nodded.
There he showed his contempt for anything that tied him to other people, anything that made him ordinary. Even then, he wished to be a different, separate, notorious. He shed his name, as you know, within a few short years of that conversation, and created the mask of Lord Voldemort, behind which he has been hidden for so long.
I trust you also noticed that Tom Riddle was already highly self-sufficient, secretive, and apparently friendless. He did not want help or companionship on his trip to Diagon Alley. He preferred to operate alone. The adult Voldemort is the same. You will hear many of his Death Eaters claiming there in his confidence that they alone are close to him, even understand him. They are deluded. Lord Voldemort has never had a friend, nor do I believe he has ever wanted one.
And lastly, I hope you are not too sleepy to pay attention to this, Harry. The young Tom Riddle liked to collect trophies. You saw the box of stolen articles he had hidden in his room? These were taken from victims in his bullying behavior, souvenirs, if you will, of particularly unpleasant bits of magic. Bear in mind this magpie-like tendency, for this particularly will be important later. And now, it really is time for bed.
Harry got to his feet. As he walked across the table, his eyes fell upon the little table upon which Marvolo's gaunt ring had rested last time, but the ring was no longer there.
"Yes, Harry," said Dumbledore, for Harry had come to a halt.
"The ring's gone," said Harry, looking around. "But I thought you might have the math organ or something."
Dumbledore beamed at him, peering over the top of his half-moon spectacles.
"Very astute, Harry, but the math organ was only ever a math organ."
And on that enigmatic note, he waved to Harry, who understood himself to be dismissed.
And that's the end of chapter 13. And next we'll read chapter 14 called Felix Felicis. And I hope you like that, my baby boo. It is bedtime for the pup and the kitten. Sweet dreams, darling. I love you.